Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to this episode of New Cyber Frontier. We have a little bit of a special episode here where we're going to go over some current events here. I have with me Frank Gearhart, who is one of our adjunct professors at Colorado Tech and works for Missile Defense Agency. Quite of an extensive resume here. He's been on before where we talked about the ISSA. He's a former president of the local chapter here. But today we are looking at the new executive order from the president, from President Trump, that came out on Thursday. It was last week, correct?
Yes, the 11th.
The 11th, Thursday the 11th. And we have all been waiting and listening for what's going to come out of the White House as far as cybersecurity. So today we thought we would take some time to kind of digest this and tell you, what is it that we're really saying here? What is this executive order saying? Welcome, Frank, though, and thanks for joining.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, definitely good to have you again. So President Trump basically issued this executive order, broke it down into four sections, and we'll kind of go through them one at a time and say, hey, here's what we got out of it. And if we didn't catch it, we'd love to have your comments below this podcast on the page to tell anybody else what they might have or what we might have missed here. The biggest thing though we got out of this is, you know, from the beginning, section one, the president wants to hold executive departments and agencies accountable for managing cybersecurity risk in their organizations.
Yes, and obviously to me that's really the way it should be. The heads are responsible for everything that goes on in their organization, and if something happens because they, you know, on their watch because of something they missed or perhaps resources they didn't put to the appropriate areas, then yeah, there should be some accountability. Absolutely, that's only be true in the private sector.
Yeah, and the thing is, I wonder, you know, how was this not happening before? It seems like it's almost like a,
I think it's just probably a reiteration, you know, an additional statement of that.
So. You're right.
In general, agencies, you know, the head agencies are responsible for it. Quite often, cybersecurity has been getting a back seat.
Yeah.
You might recall when the OMB hack happened some time ago, one of the things that came up afterward was the woman who was in charge of the OMB at the time was able to show that she had gone to Congress multiple times looking for additional funds because she knew she had an outmoded, archaic, essentially, IT infrastructure that could not be successfully, you know, protected.
Yeah.
And each time she wasn't able to get the funds she needed.
Yeah, so maybe this is a from the top down saying you're going to get the funds that's needed? Is that
I
what I'm
hearing?
I certainly
hope so, because one of the biggest problems that especially most agencies have is they don't have the money to do it.
Yeah.
It is expensive, you know, to do it properly. A lot of, as I think the president didn't mention in here, where the executive branch has for too long accepted antiquated and difficult to defend IT. I think you could probably do that across most of the federal government and probably a lot of state and local governments as well.
Yeah.
And most of it is because it is expensive to maintain and update. And it just doesn't look as sexy and you can't see as much of a positive behind it. All you can say is, well, we protected. You know, we didn't have a bad thing happen. And sometimes from an ROI, you know, return on investment viewpoint, that's very difficult to get when there are so many other more pressing requirements on an agency's budget.
Yeah. So in looking at what they're asking for here, though, and I'm right with you on that one. This first, you know, they're just looking for reports here. They're looking for all the agencies to make a report to the president of what is needed. Each agency shall provide risk management report to Homeland Security and Office of Personnel, Office of Management and Budget, OMB, which is kind of interesting that for most of the organizations, they're heading it up. And they give some dates. They say in 90 days, you have to have this report to us. And then after that, we have the OMB then has 60 days to identify inefficiencies in those reports. address immediate unmet budgetary concerns. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is where, hey, boom, we're looking at 90 days to make the report, 60 days for the government to get back. And at that point, we're looking at the six-month time horizon to where they know what to spend. That's kind of what I'm hearing, right?
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
90 days to make the report, 60 days for the government to get back. And at that point, we're looking at the six-month time horizon to where they know what to spend. That's kind of what I'm hearing, right?
I think so, although I suspect it's going to take a lot longer than that. I think that one of the reasons for all these reports is basically to find out the delta. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know where our weaknesses are.
Yeah.
I think you can make a fairly good argument that most of these agencies should have known where their weaknesses are already, and they may very well, so it's possible they may be able to get these reports
out. So these reports are something
within that time frame. They already know what their problems are, where their issues are. They just need to, you know, put it together in a single package and deliver it upstairs, you know, as this executive board is looking for. I think the problem is the bill, especially across the entire federal government, is going to be huge.
Yeah. Yeah, and then what was it? The next part says they have to establish a process for reassessing. So continuously reassessing this and determine where laws or regulations apply. And then here's a big kicker. Align with the NIST framework. And I think in section two, we'll talk about that where for the critical infrastructure, where they or where these government agencies for information security, I guess, didn't have to align with NIST at first. And Tom Bosart said that when he announced this, that, you know, this is the first time all the government information security organizations that we just mentioned, what DOD, DOE, I don't think I wrote them down for that list, but everybody that does work with data has to now meet the NIST requirements.
Right. NIST, for example, the 800-53 controls, mm-hmm. which is what DISA, the Defense Information Security Administration, is now mandates for example, for DOD, that they have to use those controls when they secure their systems, and they will be graded against those controls.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you're right, NIST is essentially a voluntary thing. You can choose to go against it. An agency can choose to use them if not. But as far as I know, I haven't heard of any orders that are where an agencies have been required by higher above them to use a particular NIST standard or framework.
Yeah, interesting. And that the first part there, we kind of just, I think we caught all the main points, but it was about information security in all the organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Section two then, cybersecurity in critical infrastructure. And this applies to organizations they mentioned, FBI, DHS, DOD, Attorney General, which I'm not sure where they're sitting from an organization, NSA, Federal Trade Commission, an interesting one I saw in there. And their immediate mandate, what they have, and this was interesting to see the timelines on here, because identify authorities and capabilities that agencies could employ to support cybersecurity efforts of critical infrastructure entities in relation to an executive order from 2013. Which is 13.636 that they reference.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been around for 5 years now, 4 years now, and they're saying we need a report of how you meet those executive that executive order, right? Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. And then here's some interesting parts of this one. First of all, focus on publicly traded critical infrastructure. What do you think about that? I mean, that's big companies, right?
That is kind of the way I look at it. I mean, if publicly traded, I think of, you know, stock, NASDAQ, you know, the Dow, et cetera. The idea here may be possibly to say these are the largest companies. These are the largest targets out there. You know, a relatively small, you know, electric companies, for example, you know, CSU, that may not be publicly traded, may not be as likely
to be. Yeah, they're a co-op, I think.
They're right. So they're not necessarily publicly traded. And public companies or agencies like this that are not publicly traded tend to be smaller and smaller targets. So if I'm a bad organization and I'm trying to make a massive impact, I'm going to go after a big, you know, a big target, and that's more likely to be a publicly traded company. I think you could have done just as well and left that particular phrase out. But then again, I don't
write
executive orders.
If you think about the target, publicly traded companies under Sarbanes-Oxley are required to report things that a private, and this is why a lot of companies are going private, they're not required to report things. I think even certain breaches and whatnot, right?
Yes, breaches have to reach to a certain level in
general,
depending on.
Even in a non-public traded company?
I believe so, but to be honest, I'm not that familiar with it. But you do bring up a good point about the requirements for publicly traded companies to report certain things, so that may be the reason why they put that phrase in there.
Yeah, I guess if you're starting with the biggest risk, that's kind of it. That's where people seem to focus. The attackers seem to focus on the big companies that have a big reputation and leave the smaller ones alone until they reach that size that they become the evil empire in their mind, I guess.
Right. Unless, for example, like in the Target hack, where they used a third-party small company to break into Target itself.
That's true.
Now, given
but they were still focusing on Target.
Yes, that's true. The Target was the big target.
Yeah. Yeah. And what the next thing I saw on there was interesting. The goal of reducing threats perpetrated by automated and distributed attacks. So botnets, distributed denial of service attacks, is a big focus lined out here. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's the biggest threat in critical infrastructure? What's your thoughts there? I mean, are they hitting the mark?
Well, I think botnets are a little bit more in the news right now, especially after that massive Internet of Things botnet that took down, was it Netflix and several others a few months ago? You know, one of the largest ones on record, I think, well, about 1.5 terabits per second, which is massively larger than anything prior to that, and the fact that they use a lot of these small IoT devices to do it. I don't think the botnets, they may be the largest external threat, but I still think a lot of times people are still the weakest link. So the insider threat, whether it's malicious or accidentally, you know, spam, that sort of thing, is probably still the most difficult to get in. Botnets, I think, are still defendable. One of the issues we found, and you see with a lot of these, with the advanced persistent threats, is they get in slowly and they stay there for a very long time.
You know what, though, just in thinking about the botnet threat, I mean, with the amount of IoT-enabled devices coming on the network, if we would get into a malware that infected them and continuously affected them, they could shut down the whole internet with just excessive traffic, make it so nothing happens anywhere.
Well, they did take down a big chunk of, not really take it down, but impact a large chunk of the internet during this massive one with the IoT ones just not too long ago, just because of the sheer size. And because in that case, as you might recall, they were able to find a back door that happened to be in a chip, which actually goes back to the supply chain that the manufacturer had, you know, left open. And this one chip was used in, you know, lots and lots and lots of devices. So by finding one vulnerability that was spread everywhere, they were able to leverage that to, like I said, make one of the largest DDoS attacks in history.
Yeah. Well, and supply chain is actually under a different organization. We'll talk about that in a minute. The thing to close there is that was interesting to me is the timelines. So the critical infrastructure, those organizations talked about, FBI, DHS, DOD, Attorney General, NSA, FTC, have 240 days to produce an initial report, but a year for a final report. So we're looking at not getting even the report back to say what's the path forward in critical infrastructure for another year.
Yes, and I think that has to do with the fact that the federal government is just so big. I mean, we're talking, 4 million employees total, if you include, you know, the military, et cetera. I mean, by far the largest employer, single organization on the planet.
But we had 90 days for information security and the data-oriented IT networks.
I suspect that's going to be a more high-level report at the end of the day. It's not going to drill down into quite the level of depth that that I would be dealing with, the average operator or
maybe there's just more disarray in critical infrastructure. There's we can't put a pole in the mud anywhere, so we kind of have an understanding of and monitoring tools on our information security networks, but critical infrastructure is just still the Wild West, right?
I would think so, and also don't forget that even though it's you know, the internet is so commercial now. The original idea of the internet was to be able to handle damage and recover on its own.
Yeah.
That was the point of it. The electrical grid wasn't really designed that way. Same thing with water, sewage,
yeah, and that's the next one. The under that cybersecurity and critical infrastructure, the Secretary of Energy and Secretary of Homeland Defense now are tasked, DOE, DHS, are tasked with potential scope and duration of prolonged power outage associated with significant cyber incidents. So they're looking for what is the chance and the capability, the risk that prolonged outage is going to occur from cyber. And I guess this is probably, you know, this is spurred from those things we saw in Eastern Europe, that whole grids were taken down and for how long, and what is our capability here? And our capability to address and gaps and shortcomings in assessing capabilities. Now, there was a couple timelines on here, and I bounced through them. There was five or six different things stated. I couldn't find anything that was, I think it's still kind of in that 240 days in a year time frame with these. This as well. And the last thing kind of in that area, or I guess the last federal organization, the thing that was addressed is counterterrorism on cybersecurity risk. And before we get into that one, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
All right, welcome back. We are talking about the presidential directive that came out on May 11th. And we were talking about the different agencies and what their responsibilities, and that this is a big reporting requirement. Go and make a report and come back to me with what you found. I don't see too much in the way yet of what we're going to do about it, just that we're going to make a report right now. Yeah, and the counterterrorism was where we ended there. Counterterrorism on cybersecurity risks facing the defense industrial base, including supply chain, United States military platforms. Now, this is under DOD and FBI. That is interesting. Why is that FBI and DOD? What's your thoughts?
Well, the DOD, obviously, because the defense industrial base, i.e. Boeing, Lockheed Martin, you know, the big players, and the hundreds and thousands of smaller ones, they're part of the defense industrial base. They handle classified information, whether it's developing the next generation of fighter or the next type of rocket engine, et cetera. And a lot of that work is done at their locations, not inside a DOD facility.
So this is why their supply chain cyber is under their wing.
That would be part of it too. The FBI, I would probably, because they would be the ones who'd be tasked with investigating anything like that, since they handle national investigations, et cetera, along, working with the DOD, obviously.
I guess that's as good as an explanation as any. I wouldn't be able to put a finger on how to choose who works in supply chain.
Well, the problem is with the supply chain there is obviously it's the contractors, i.e. the defense industrial base, who figures that out. The DOD doesn't tell a contractor, go get parts from this particular person. What they do say is you have to meet these certain standards. There is a standard out there in terms of making sure that the parts you get are from correct companies. That you don't buy certain parts from certain countries as well. Anything you do come in,
the ITAR regulations.
Exactly, the ITAR is critical on that one. However, so that does help, and we are doing that now. It's not like we've never done this before, but this sounds like it's just a tightening down of that, even more careful. The problem with that is that tends to drive the cost up.
Yeah.
And also drives a timeline up.
Yeah. Interesting. So what was one other thing I had noted, we already talked about that all agencies are required to adhere to NIST frameworks. And here's an interesting one. The only place I saw this Effective risk management involves more than just protecting IT and data currently in place. It also requires planning so that maintenance, improvements, and modernization occur in a coordinated way with appropriate regularity. So this is the only place in here where I hear them talking about the future. Everything else is talking about the past. Make me a report, find out what's going on, how are we meeting it, you know, how are we defending, how can we meet the risks and the threats. But this says, okay, oh yeah, by the way, we also want to look at how do we improve, modernize, and coordinate things on a regular basis. I think that should be everywhere, but
it should be. I suspect that what's going to happen is, ideally, is after they get these reports, say, okay, we know where we are, we know where we need to get to, let's get there, let's get a plan to get there, and once we get there, let's make sure we stay there and not fall behind again.
Yeah.
So once we get to this point, how are we going to continue doing this? Any decent, IT thing is going to be planning for that, for obsolescence, for, you know, my version of Windows is dead, or it's not going to get security patches anymore. I need to make sure I budget ahead of time, so when that time comes, I'm already on the next version, or I've got new hardware that can run the next version. And I have to plan that in advance, because, you know, budgets are done, you know, in advance. You can't wait till last minute and suddenly expect to spend millions of dollars, you know, to replace IT.
Yeah, when I see that, though, I think of, you know, security wasn't designed into, and this is what I think of looking at the future, into our current protocols and networks and operation stacks, and IoT is growing without security at all. Mm-hmm. Is the thought process for how does that get implemented in the future, even if it's making a whole new protocol and gradually weeding out the old ones with what's new.
Well, I think that might tie back into the supply chain, where you start going back and saying, okay, if you want to do business with me, you know, chip supplier or whatever, you have to meet certain security standards, and I have to be able to test them and verify you've done them.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you start bringing it all the way up, now you get to feel a little more secure about what you're doing, because we don't know what's in the chip, mm-hmm. you know, necessarily. Sometimes we have to take the word, but if they can be validated.
Or in the firmware or the software.
Exactly.
Billions of lines of code that we don't, you know, are all open source or contributed by unknown authors.
Right. For example, let's say you've got your stuff in Python. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may write really, really great Python code. It's wonderful. But if you're using third-party libraries and they're vulnerable, you've brought all those vulnerabilities into you.
Yeah.
So you have to know, what am I using? Which ones are vulnerable? Which ones aren't? Is there a way I can maybe not use that one, write my own, but then that adds cost, money, and time?
Yeah.
You know, to everything. So it, at the end of the day, it does come down to how much are you willing to spend. It's a risk management issue, really.
Yeah. So that was for section on cybersecurity and critical infrastructure, section 2. Section 3, cybersecurity for the nation. And, you know, I saw a lot of boilerplate in this one, like blah, 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 blah. But the first thing that really jumped out on me is they have, further, the United States seeks to support the growth and sustainment of the workforce that is skilled in cybersecurity and related fields as a foundation for achieving our objectives in cyberspace. But there was absolutely nobody with accountability or responsibility for that. It's just like a statement out there like, oh yeah, we'd like this stuff to happen.
Yes, but you know, I mean, you and I both know we're working in the field of trying to bring this team in, and we know how many jobs are open even just in this area,
yeah.
much less nationwide or around the world. And the timeline it takes to get, you know, yeah. to get people from where they are to the level of need, and we've got, you know, the long term.
But there wasn't like a Department of Education in here or anything. It was just kind of like a shooting from the hip. Yeah, whoever wants to do this, please, contact us at 1-800-555-1212 type of thing. Joking about that one, but okay. So what is next? I saw in that section. Secretary of State, Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of Defense, Attorney General, Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Homeland Defense, United States Trade Representatives, and Director of National Intelligence. They have 90 days to make a report on counterterrorism, and then 45 days for that report to be turned into what are our external priorities. So we're looking at 6 months mm-hmm. before we get... This is just a request for information in this section again, and 6 months to determine what are we going to do next. Yeah. So all this request for information, that's really all I got out of that section. Like I said, a lot of boilerplate. We want everybody to act, and we'd like to have all this stuff, but no real responsible parties.
True. And actually, going back to what we were talking about, the workforce development, there's a little part further down in under Section 3 where it talks about, so the Secretary of Commerce and Secretary of Homeland Security are supposed to assess our efforts nationwide to train it. So you're right, they don't have a responsibility to help, just to see, hey, how are we doing?
Yeah.
And for that, I'm sure they're going to come out, you know, to colleges such as CTU, other universities, schools, et cetera, who will then come back and say, well, you know, we're doing this or we're not doing this. And
yeah, it's interesting that there's so much a cry out for our education, but it's, like I said, no responsible bodies on putting together a framework. I do like the NICE framework under
yes.
DHS. So there is and that's why I thought that they should be in here. They should have been called out in here as to, you know, making that connection, but I don't see it.
No, they don't. One thing they do point out, which I find interesting too, is they're looking at the workforce of evidence of potential foreign cyber peers, basically what are enemies doing to bring up that. And that's one area that is critical. Russia has a huge group of very qualified, very good cyber engineers that they have brought up. China is working very, very hard, mm-hmm. you know, to develop the next generation as well as strengthen their current generation of cybersecurity, both defenders and, you know, and offense on that. I think in that area, we are definitely behind the curve.
Interesting. Yeah. Anything else you got from that Section 3? That's all I had taken notes on.
No, I think it's pretty much exactly what we just discussed.
Yeah. Section 4, you know, definitions. It was just can close with a couple of things that was another boilerplate section. The only thing I got out of there, and we were talking about this before, is in the first definition, they seem to lump IT and critical infrastructure together by saying IT now includes physical systems, cyber physical systems. They didn't say that word, but that's a little bit about what I got out of it. That's kind of what you were picking
up
too.
Well, as I said, as we discussed earlier, when I read it, it talks about includes hardware and software processes that monitor and control physical. I see that as the SCADA systems and the, you know, ICS, the industrial control systems. Which
that's what I'm calling the cyber physical.
Are directly, you know, the electrical grid. They control the electrical grid.
But they make electromechanical operations. So we're talking about
they do.
Commands that go over the wire
yes.
that do something that could cause physical damage and injury to people.
Yes, and in fact, there was an attack several months ago on a dam in
yes.
the United States where the bad guys essentially were able to get into the dam and set a control that would have opened the floodgates. As it turned out, coincidentally, those floodgates were shut down for maintenance, so there was a physical disconnect there.
Yeah.
But had they been able to, that would have been an obvious attack on an industrial control system by being able to remotely, you know, control that dam and possibly do damage downstream.
Yeah, but it seems like that they've kind of lumped those together, but there's still so much disconnect, and that's what we saw between the critical infrastructure section, the IT section, even in time frame of give us a report, but one gets 90 days, the other gets a year.
Yeah, they also talked about in general further on up about more transparency.
Yes,
how companies should be sharing data risk, et cetera. However, that's very, very difficult to do when it's optional.
Yeah, it was support transparency. I saw that especially listed in the critical infrastructure section that all the reports and all the analysis are supposed to say, how can we be transparent on this?
Right. And one of the reasons why, obviously, because, you know, if a company may not want to expose that, hey, we were attacked, either because, you know, it might hurt their bottom line or other, you know, their competitors might take advantage of that. I wish we could do something like the FAA has with their pilots. You know, if you are a pilot, you know, obviously, whether it's commercial, you know, whatever, and you have a problem, you make a mistake, and it causes, you know, either an emergency or a near emergency. If you report it yourself and tell the FAA, this is what I did wrong, this is what happened, it basically immunizes you from anything from the FAA because they've decided that the information that they get and share, and they do this within a week or so, they share it with everybody in a newsletter that anyone can get. Here's what happened. Here's what, you know, we did this, we missed something. And that shares that information so other pilots don't make that same mistake.
You know, I heard that actually just recently has been put in, I think, the DHS,
mm-hmm.
That if you share something on information security or information sharing analysis or a U.S. CERT type of thing where you're sharing it with other people risks, then you're immune from being prosecuted for it.
Right. And a lot of IT companies now, especially the cybersecurity, where they come in, they're cloud-based, they say, okay, we will come in and we will help you, take care of, protect your network. However, in exchange, anything we find, any attacks, et cetera, we're going to send that information to our cloud, anonymize as much as possible, and share that with all our other clients. So everybody knows about it at the same time, not necessarily that you were the one that was attacked, but that attack is going out there, and here's how they get in, and here's how you can defend yourself to minimize anything. So I'm glad to see the transparency. I would love to see it across the board. I think we've got some cultural obstacles to overcome before that happens.
Yeah. Well, I think we kind of good summary here on what we see there, and I think we'd like to do more of these. We'll get some. Thank you, Frank, for coming for
My pleasure. This talk.
But definitely to go through and make these very. I don't know, this one's not even technical, but it's very legalistic executive orders, and break it down to something we all can understand and walk away from. And because it took us a while to go through these, digging through this, but we can kind of talk through it and give it to you in a 30-minute conversation.
Right, and one thing I can say is the Department of Defense, at least in particular, is already doing a lot of this. The CIO of the DoD is already aware of all this and has told all the combatant commands, agencies, et cetera, you will do this and you will start rolling up the information to me on what's going on. And there is a process in place to get that done. It's still being cleaned up and everything, but there is a technical process they're doing to learn about this and roll it up as quickly as possible. So the DoD at least can be, will be protected. And also requirements for the Defense Industrial Base to start meeting a lot of the same standards.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today, Frank. And once again, if you have any comments, or start a train underneath this anywhere you see it posted on LinkedIn or on the Logic Central website, the new Cyber Frontier. Put your comments below. Something we missed, something you want to get out to somebody else, something you saw in this, or that may be of more value that we might have missed. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.